The Guardian.
During March, The Guardian's podcasts are sponsored by audible.co.uk. Audible has over 60,000 digital audiobooks and are offering Guardian podcast listeners one for free. Visit guardian.co.uk/free download to find out more.
Welcome to a very special Football Weekly Live for a special day, the Open Weekend, so named after Harry Redknapp's season, because it starts with Open and then it has a weekend. Anyway, today we're bringing you live the vocal talents of Sean Ingle, Barry Glendening, and for the very first time ever on Football Weekly, Marina Hyde. It's been a momentous week in football. The Carlos Tevez affair, King Kenny, with more slip-ups by the pool than today's Richards. And, of course, the extraordinary business of Fabrice Muamba surviving 78 minutes without a heart. Ken Bates has managed 80 years so far, of course, but that's setting the bar particularly high. We're going to be discussing some of those issues in the course of today's extra special Football Weekly Live. Right, well, first of all, many thanks to you all for making it in today. Lovely afternoon. It's Saturday afternoon in King's Cross. Sun is shining out on the canal. Inside here, some right-minded folk gathered. And what they want to discuss is the state of football, I think. Sean Ingle, shall we start with one of the key topics this week? Fabrice Muamba. A week on from his collapse, everyone's delighted at the incredible recovery that he's made. What message do you think about the way football thinks about itself can we draw from the way the whole industry reacted?
And we have to be a bit careful here because it's a sensitive issue. Thankfully, he's on the path to recovery. But at the same time, though, I do think the Diana complex has hit football. You know, we all remember when Princess Diana died, bless her, in a Paris tunnel. The reaction, I felt like I was in a different country. And I think it's the same with this. The whole pray for Muamba thing, it wasn't God that healed Muamba, it was the doctors and the physicians.
Get it out there.
And I think it's wonderful he's recovered. I think it's wonderful that the football family has been supportive of him. But as Marina said in her brilliant column on Thursday, it shouldn't take what happened to Fabrice to make people nice to one another.
Right, well, there are two issues there, possibly. One is the fact of whether it's actually standard, it's due care what football did, and it shouldn't be patting itself on the back for it. The other is the fact of these extraordinary football fatwa t-shirts instructing everybody who to pray for. I think it's one thing to come out with a t-shirt saying best wishes to, and we're rooting for Fabrice, but these extraordinary instructions from Premier League football, pray for Fabrice. I find that a little bit strange, but I don't think it is a sensitive issue because I think it's clear that everybody wishes this extraordinary young man the best in his absolutely miraculous recovery. But the rest of it,
as you would with anybody.
As you would with anybody.
You hope. Yeah. You hope. And that there should be all sorts of things on the news and everything that perhaps put football into perspective every day.
Very true. Very true. Good. OK. Barry.
Well, I think what's clear from this is that you, James, hate Fabrice Muamba. And you hate God. I don't know how long we're here for today, but that's quite a lot of stuff we need to discuss and unravel. But some people may have heard and others may not, I got punched twice in the face in my local pub in Brixton while celebrating St. Patrick's Day last Saturday. And the reason I got punched in the face is because I took exception to some loud-mouthed, drunken comments one of the fellow revelers was making about Fabrice Muamba when he was being stretchered off. And I sort of made the point that maybe I thought what he was saying was a bit tasteful. And this guy was so stupid that he's an Arsenal fan. He thought Muamba played for Spurs. And he was shouting at the TV how great it was that a Spurs player was about to die. And so I kind of made the point, well, A, he's a Bolton player. B, he used to play for your team, and you clearly don't even know that. And C, he's dying, you know, and you're shouting, you know, about how great it is at the TV. So I think to a certain extent, that's the kind of person you're dealing with. There's people like him in every ground in England, and I think there's way more of them than there should be. You know, we had the interview with Billy Sharp in the Guardian this morning, a lovely interview. He lost his infant child a couple of days after he was born, and somebody abused him. I think it was a Barnsley fan. So there's no place for that in football. And the manner in which football's been so pleased with itself because people just behaved as you would expect them to tells you more about what an awful state the game is in than anything else, I think.
What will happen to the T-shirts, do you think, as he recovers, and I hope, you know, the recovery seems to be going well, will they just sort of stop, or will the messages just gradually sort of peter down to sort of fancy a coffee, Mwamba, or just, you know, just gradually, because they've got to wind it down. They can't sort of pull it overnight.
I'm sure they'll have something else to put on T-shirts.
You think they've got a phase two for the campaign?
Yeah, well, there'll be something else. There'll be some other big campaign. I have to say, and I'm sure we'll all agree about this, it's nicer to be complaining about football being pleased with itself for behaving well than to be here, once again, wringing our hands over football behaving badly. Speaking of which, Carlos Tevez.
I love him.
Is he the last man of honour in football, Marina Hyde?
He shows football for what he is, not even a player, just a series of transactions. He shows football for what it is. I do genuinely think Mancini is aging before our very eyes. He's got a sort of half-life shorter than a lot of radioactive isotopes. Please don't write in if I've said that wrong, scientists, because I will get that sort of thing wrong. But he's understood the compact with hypocrisy that he's had to make, and it's just aging him by the minute. He's going to be like Benjamin Button by the end of the season. It's extraordinary. But Tevez is just a sort of his point of non-principle, which he lost 10 million quid over. There are few people in football who would lose 10 million quid on a point of non-principle.
Yeah, well, just on a point of principle, if he was like Benjamin Button, wouldn't he be really young by the end of the season?
Yeah, I got that wrong as well.
Yeah, okay. No, so basically, you're quite excited by the fact that here's a chap who said, I don't fancy this, I'll turn my nose up at 10 million and spend a bit of time golfing.
I just think that he epitomises to a large extent what modern football is, and people do, he therefore is, there's this line in The Picture of Dorian Gray, which is actually Stuart Pearce's favourite novel, trivia fans, genuinely, he told me that once when I saw him reading Middlemarch in a media centre. Again, interesting reading for him. Someone says, you are the type which the age is searching for and which it is afraid it has found. And that is Carlos Tevez. He is the type of the age of modern football.
All right, well, Carlos Tevez is a topic which has excited a lot of comment from a lot of you here. Tony from Dorchester, has Mancini done well? Which is a slightly broader question, but I think it certainly touches on that. Chris wants to know what is going on inside Carlos Tevez's head. And Paul, has Tevez, yes or no? Marina, you've given that one a yes, haven't you?
What?
Tevez, what? Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
just
broadly speaking.
Yes.
Yeah, Barry, you thumbs up?
I think he's a treacherous little scut. But what I found really interesting is that when he came back to play his first reserve game, now I was away, so I didn't see the City game during the week. I don't know what kind of reception he got, but when he came back to play in his first reserve game, and about 2,000 people, I think, turned up, Man City fans, and they gave him a great welcome, which I just found extraordinary, because this man has treated them with nothing but contempt, and yet they're prepared to welcome him back. And I think I would prefer my team to not win the league but take a stand against a player like that than win the league with him in the side.
Well, this is a little bit coming on to this question of how well Mancini's done, because when he originally said Tevez wouldn't be playing for the team again, a lot of people lauded him for his principled stance and said he'd been strong and he'd handled the situation perfectly. Effectively, what he's doing now is to a large extent backtracking on that. But I'm not sure to what extent Tevez has mocked the fans or anything. He goes there and plays for the money. When he's played, he's always done really well and given his best for them. At a certain point, he decided that he didn't fancy it under Mancini. And then he left. At no point has he lived the lie, I think, as Marina was saying. He's never towed the line of this kind of, I'm kissing the badge and thumping my chest for the club. So I'm giving Tevez a yes for what it's worth. But what about you?
I think he's an excellent player, but he's been really badly advised. Mm. Someone like him, who's semi-literate, he's from the streets, needs, you know, an arm around his shoulder that's sort of and a kindly whisper in his ear. Instead, he's got Keir Drabchuran, which is, you know,
If he was at Spurs, he'd be all right, basically, yeah? Harry Redknapp. No.
I think Harry would manage him perhaps better, but I think actually, to go on to the Mancini question, I think Mancini's done all right so far. I think it's a difficult situation for him in many ways because he's got so many egos on that squad, and he's kept that squad together, and they've won the FA Cup. But clearly, if they don't win the league this year with by far the best squad, then the pressure will be on him. Mm. And they have got the best squad. I don't think anyone would dispute that.
All right, are they going to win the league this year, sure?
Judging by the run-ins, probably not. United have got basically a few penalty kicks. They've got Fulham. They've got he consults notes. Blackburn, QPR, Wigan, Villa. And then it gets tough with Everton at home and City away. I mean, really, United should win the next five games. It's whether City can match them. And City have still got to play Arsenal. They've still got to play Sunderland. So it's tougher for them.
All right, OK. Paul? Hello, Paul. Did you write about, is Fergie playing mind games or has Vieira hit a nerve? All right, then. Well, that's the question, then. Mind games, Marina?
The reference to mind games is like the Cuban Missile Crisis, when they eventually accept the earlier memo from the Soviets and there's all this incredible game theory going on. It's really not like minor insults tossed across Manchester. I hate the description of mind games. I absolutely hate it. I think that most of the time that it's allegedly played by Ferguson, it's all correlated and not causal. People, even Keegan, he was on such a hair trigger that you could have asked him what the time was and he'd have lost it. I genuinely think that these things they don't make anywhere near the difference at all that people think they do.
That's what Fergie wants you to think, though, isn't it?
But this is how the press conference works. The journalists would have gone in there yesterday and they would have basically peppered Fergie with the questions just to get that response, because you're a journalist, you want a line that's on your front page the next day. And Fergie, to be honest, Fergie's bored. He's when he's not chucking the journalists out of his press conference, and I think most of them have been banned from Manchester United, he now and again he throws them a bone, and that's what he's done this time.
But what did he say that was so extra? He just made a perfectly valid point. It's not some up all night studying psychology.
It's just a comeback. It's a comeback. It's not a, the Vulcan mind meld. It's not.
All right. Which Premier League manager gives the best press conference, do you think, Sean?
It used to be Neil Warnock, who was brilliant. He'd go in there.
On your taste.
Depending on your taste, but there'd be a drab nil-nil. You'd have like 600 words to write, and there'd be nothing. And he would go in and fume about something, and he would give you 200 or 300 words that would help you pad out a report, which is, as a journalist, is quite useful. In terms of, I think Wenger, all the press really love Wenger. They come in, he's really polite to them. He chats them one-on-one individually. If you go there on a Friday to Arsenal, so everyone likes Wenger. The worst, give me a thing. Pass it around and we'll think about the worst.
All right,
What's his name? Norwich, isn't it?
Paul Lambert.
Paul Lambert, I think. I have never been to one. But I believe. That doesn't matter. No, but apparently he's just incredibly doesn't give anything away and just straight bats everything.
Cool. And notice the anti-Norwich bias there, yeah. Barry Glendening.
Yeah,
I think we all saw that. The mask beginning to slip away. There's somebody here asking Barry's bias against everyone. Who isn't Barry biased against? Barry.
Sunderland and
Lewis not FC. Lewis.
Interestingly, Lewis FC beat Tranmere Rovers 3-0 on the Danny Baker Show sausage sandwich game this morning, and I was genuinely pleased. Like I was listening to the radio in bed. Going, yes. So that's what I've been reduced to.
Excellent. Now,
but no, sorry, to answer the question seriously, I'm biased against very. There are a couple of teams I love to see lose, but I'm not going to say who they are. But people only tend to take on board comments you make about their team. So, if you say something slightly derogatory about, Swansea, you get accused of anti-Swansea. But people don't read or listen to what you say about other teams. People are very paranoid, not just Roberto Di Matteo.
Right. Now, Liverpool. Philip from Birmingham. Hello, Philip. Hi, Philip from Birmingham. When will the media recognise that Dalglish is a worse manager than Roy Hodgson, who I want to stay at the Hawthorns? Hey, tell you what, Philip from Birmingham, a lot of people writing on in similar terms. Ashley Curtis, there you go. You two have something in common there. You've got a lot of numbers here about Hodgson's win ratio in the FA Cup, Premier League and Champions League. We'll move on. Sean from Wirral. Dalglish out, if so now or in June. In which month of 2013 will Kenny Dalglish get fired? Keith.
Did Liverpool lose today, by the way?
Yes. Final score at Anfield?
Yeah.
2-1. So that's their first defeat at home to Wigan in the Premier League, which is ever, isn't it, really?
Yeah. But you've got to remember, as Kenny said, no one in 30 years is going to remember who won the league. It's the League Cup that they're going to remember. And maybe the FA Cup.
And all the sponsorship deals.
Yeah, and the sponsorship deals, which are obviously...
And the great PR fearless. They've done as well.
Yeah.
So, well, there you go. Is there now a real feeling, do you think, building on Merseyside, Sean Ingle, that the future lies elsewhere, manager?
I think it will depend on the fans primarily, and I think the fans still believe in Dalglish. I might be wrong, but when I speak to Liverpool fans, he's won them the League Cup, that buys them a bit of time. But I do think the American owners will start getting twitchy. I mean, when you give up, 50 million on, Carroll and Henderson, another 20 million on Downing, I mean, that's an awful lot of money for not much return. And I mean, this season they've drawn 8 at home, lost 2, and only won 5. And 3 of those wins have been against teams in the bottom 5. I mean, it's not good enough. I think he's got a bit of time.
And I do think they think that he mishandled the Suarez business. I do definitely think that it becomes problematic once it crosses the Atlantic and it starts being in the Washington Post and New York Times. I think for them it's much more problematic. And I do think that has made an impact.
Well, absolutely. But it's whether...
and so it's whether put together...
Yeah, I wonder whether Dalglish, he sort of struggled with the pressure the first time at Liverpool. He left Newcastle quite quickly after, he didn't spend very long there. I wonder whether he might walk away at some point in summer.
But he won the title. He was a legendary manager at Liverpool and then at Blackburn. It was the pressure that got to him. The pressure doesn't seem to be the issue this time. So what is it that he's getting so badly wrong now? Has the game changed since he was in it last time, or what? Game done changed?
Got more fierce.
All right, then. Yeah. No, I'm surprised.
Guardian
reasons? No. Okay.
Yeah, I think it has changed. I don't think necessarily Dalglish has gone with it. I think his tactics are quite primitive in many ways. It is, 2 wide men lob the ball up to big man. I think they lack a striker. I think Suarez is an excellent second striker. He's an excellent wing forward, but he doesn't score enough goals. Carroll's been a complete flop. I know Barry stuck up for him in the past in the pods. I don't know whether he still does now. He says thrown him.
Well, you're doing me a disservice there. I only stuck up for him with regard to his extracurricular off-the-field activities. When you, having never met the man, were basically condemning him as a raving alcoholic. You and other journalists who have never seen him in a pub, never seen him drink a beer. I just, how do you know what he gets up to in his spare time? He's obviously been a pretty disastrous signing. He's shown odd patches of form. Downing's been awful. I couldn't believe it when I saw they were paying whatever 12 to 15 million for Jordan Henderson, who I think is a very average box-to-box midfielder who has shown signs of promise but very little else. And
it's an unbelievable bill. It's about 115 million quid or something, isn't it? Something extraordinary.
I would argue that Dalglish is worse than Hodgson, but Hodgson I don't think was ever going to work at Liverpool because of his, Jonathan Wilson always tells us about his very boring training ground routines, which you can't imagine players like Steven Gerrard being interested in. But I also think Dalglish, he has a lot of goodwill left in the bank from Hillsborough and how he behaved afterwards, and deservedly so. And he does seem to have a lot of chums in the media who fight his corner, whereas they wouldn't have fought Hodgson.
All right, excellent. On a manager, Joey, did you want to give your view on the Kenny Dalglish issue?
I've said a couple of things. Yeah. We'll leave it there, shall we?
All right, then. Let me ask you...
We will need our... What did he say? We all need intelligence tests. It's us... We've just got to adjust our minds because the fault is not with his view of reality, it's with our view of reality.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Right, so we all needed intelligence tests for fixating on the league.
And this was what Kenny Dalglish said, was it?
Didn't he say that? He said you need intelligence tests. It's all, people, 30 years' time, people might be remembering the League Cup and maybe the FA Cup. So
Ah, bless. Right, okay, Marina, quick question for you. What does the Chelsea future look like with John Terry as manager?
Well, he has come out and said he's made it very clear he's not the manager, and that that's completely normal behaviour for anyone. All disabled parking spaces in Chelsea Village will be free for first team places only. He will be the man who proves that even Chelsea Village must have its idiot. And I kind of like to see him as part of the whole kind of expansion of the brand as well, and sort of just taking it overseas. I think it will be an interesting time. There's been a lot of Chelsea player managers.
There have been a lot. Yeah.
He could really do something with that legacy.
Is it a real prospect, do you think, Sean?
At the moment, no. But I think that Roman Abramovich's first target is Pep Guardiola. Why would you go there? I think he wants Mourinho, but Mourinho might be intrigued by it. But at the same time, Mourinho is always texting Essien, Lampard, Drogba, Terry. They're his friends. Would he go back to Chelsea and then just basically tell them where to go? Possibly, but it's a big rebuilding project there. So even though I think, you know, Mourinho was a bit of value at 8-1, sorry, he lapses into betting, a few weeks ago, I don't think he should be the favourite necessarily.
Who is the favourite right now?
Well, I don't think Chelsea have one. I think, you know,
whoever's
the flavour of the month. You know, if France do well in the Euros, I think, you know, he'll Blanc will suddenly become a favourite. There isn't much planning at Chelsea. It's all about, you know, who the flavour of the month and who Abramovich fancies. And so if some manager wins the Europa League that are playing great football, suddenly he'll be catapulted into, you know, favouritism.
Hmm? All right then.
All right. Well, listen, I tell you what. Shall we get our hands in the air if we've got any more questions? There are one or two others here. But if any of you have got any burning issues that you'd like to unload at this point, then now would be the ideal moment. We have a couple of microphones, and there's a man with a mic in his hand at them. Indeed. What's your name, sir?
Josh.
Hi, Josh.
I was just wondering, do you still think Arsene Wenger is the right man for Arsenal?
Personally?
Yeah.
Right. Yes. Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Why are you waving? No. Okay. Oh, right. Yeah, no. Clearly. How can you argue with him? Top of the form table. Seven wins out of seven. So it was all just those pesky injuries, it turns out. And also, you know, from my understanding, it seems to be a club so finely tuned to his particular way of doing things that to remove him and bring in somebody else...
But that's a blessing and a curse, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You're right. It's a blessing and a curse, basically.
It's like Football Weekly when you're away.
Yeah, very much so. who else has got a question? Ah, hello.
Hi there. Riadin from Glasgow.
Hello, Riadin.
This takes me back to the early 70s, an episode of Saint and Greavesy, when you would think that Scottish football didn't exist at all. I'm sure you and Murray would have a view that it probably doesn't, even though people are out in the park every Saturday. What's your own sort of view of the state of Scottish football? Do you know about it? And we seem to be more famous. We seem to be more famous for bomb plots and mysterious deaths of QCs and stuff like that. Any views?
I think the whole range of story is incredible and extraordinary, and is so much. Of course, you know, it's the most resonant story across, up and down the whole. I mean, in fact, even across Europe, it's quite extraordinary, and it may well be the tale when people go back to find the tale that epitomises this particular time of football. They may well alight on that particular Scottish football story. I think they will. I can't see where else you'd go, because it's just almost... It's gothic in its horrors, isn't it?
Be honest, I don't really watch Scottish football. I watch Old Firm games. There's one on tomorrow. We have the bizarre state of affairs that Celtic could win the SPL in March at Ibrox, and it could be the last ever Old Firm derby. Which is just extraordinary, but I find it a bit odd that Celtic fans are so happy that Rangers could possibly go out of existence, because I'm from the school of thought that thinks they need each other to survive, and they, without each other, they're nothing. But Celtic fans, who know more about this kind of thing than I do, don't seem to agree. But I don't have any sympathy for Rangers. They've brought all this on themselves. My only possible
for the club, but for the support.
Have you seen them?
Well. I'm a bleeding heart on this.
The only small bit of sympathy that I would have with them is that I find it strange that it's a Scottish club that's apparently been made an example of by the revenue and not an English one, which I find a bit weird.
Sure.
I watched a lot of Scottish football in the 80s and 90s, and I think it was a decent standard there. I mean, to be honest, I agree with Marina, it's a terrible tragedy what's happened at Rangers, but if you actually look at the quality, why would you, as a now these days when we have so much football on offer, and I'll watch 7 or 8 games a weekend, why would you watch, you know, with due respect to Scottish football, I don't know, St Mirren, Dunfermline, or what, you know, because you affect watching League One players for the most part, or perhaps Championship players, and the quality isn't there, and that's a great shame, because Scottish football, you go back 15, 20 years, you know, actually perhaps a bit further, was as strong as many of the, you know, not the big leagues, but, you know, the just beneath the, you know, the Englands and the Spains and the Italy's. Now it's just, you know, lump it and hoof it, and there's not much else to it. And I'm generalising a bit, not massively, but you know, as you know, in the open market, you know, why would you watch Scottish football when, you know, through Sky you can watch, you know, countless games every weekend that are better.
And with the problems at Rangers, is there any sign of the situation getting anything but worse in general for Scottish football?
Yeah, I think it's only going one way at the moment.
Oof. All right. Question from the gentleman over there.
Yes, David, it's another question outside the Premiership. I wonder what the panel think about West Ham, Big Sam's brand of football there, and the prospect possibly of seeing that team back in the Premier League in their current state.
What little I've seen of them, I've found appalling. What I have found funny is our resident West Ham fan, which most of you probably heard on Football Week before, Jacob Steinberg, how he has gone from being absolutely appalled that Big Sam was in charge to, and he'd come into the office after having attended a game, and he's like, "Oh, it's caveman football, this is embarrassing." And now he's sort of gradually coming around and starting to make excuses for it. You know, it's effective, it gets results.
Oh, has he mentioned the Moneyball yet? Because he has read, he doesn't like to talk about it, Big Sam, but he has read Moneyball.
Oh, yeah?
And yeah, oh, he talks about it all the time.
I know, Maria, you've had several interesting encounters with Big Sam, which you might like to share with the group.
I had a run-in once with Big Sam at a football writer's dinner on a Ryan Giggs, and Big Sam was there in his dinner jacket, which actually has leather lapels, which is a really... I don't know if anyone's maybe thinking of buying, but it's a really good look, and I would really... Anyway, it's just something I haven't seen done before, liked it. Anyway, but obviously I think after about, I don't know what time in the evening, possibly actually midday, he's quite a belligerent person, and he took exception to the fact that a woman was there at all, but particularly the one who had anything to do with writing, anything even remotely connected to sport. And challenged me, said, "Come on, ask me a question. Yeah, ask me anything about, you know, I bet you can't even ask me a question. Ask me a question about something not to do with football." So I said, "All right then. Do you think it's easier for an off-spinner... Is it harder and harder for an off-spinner to make it in the modern game?" At which point he said, "See, you know, absolutely nothing," and unleashed a whole big rant about Shane Warne. I just sat there and waited and just said, "Sammy, he bowls leg spin." And then he left. He left. But it was one of those moments. It was one of those moments. I've had others less satisfactorily resolved.
Big Sam is a legendary figure, though, among especially with his moustache. Did you prefer pre or after the?
Gosh, it's so difficult. Oh, I like all his looks. I like all his looks.
So, Sean, you got a view on West Ham. Do you want to see them playing that kind of football in the Premier League after we've seen the likes of Swansea and Norwich come up and illuminate the top division?
I don't care either way if they get up. Good luck to them. But I think he will have failed if he doesn't get that team up, because, I mean, there are two ways to go, really, when you get relegated. You can either fire sale, and I think that's what Wolves will do. That's why Kirbyshe didn't take the job. They basically said to him, "Look, if we go down, we're going to have to sell lots of our best players." Or you sort of, you know, bite the bullet, you keep on these players on big contracts, and you try and get back up straight away. And West Ham have a squad that should be getting them back up. And they could still well go up. But at the moment, they are faltering. They're drawing too many games. And you know, at the moment he's not doing as well as he should do.
Mm. But playing that kind of football to get up, it's kind of the same moral principle as fielding Carlos Tevez to win a title, isn't it? Is it?
It's business.
Yeah, it's business.
It's business.
Yeah.
But doesn't he always play that type
of game? Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
It's always business.
It's not like...
it's always business.
Oh, we'll just resort to this for a while and then turn into Swansea when we get up.
Yeah. All right.
If they went up, would Stoke go down? Could we just replace like that'd be okay.
Paul Reeve. Hello, Paul Reeve.
No.
Oh, hi. Hi, Paul. Is there any controversy in Spain, asked Paul Reeve, about Messi's course of growth hormones? Ooh. Ooh, interesting one. None of us here are actually living in Spain, so...
We should ring Sid.
We should ring Sid, actually. But it's
dealt with. There's a book by Luca Camoni, I think, that deals with this. Basically, Messi was very, very small as a child. Therefore, he was given growth hormones. He came off them at a young enough age that it didn't really affect his football. And there doesn't seem to be any controversy at all.
Oh, there you go. No controversy there. That gentleman there.
Hello. Talking of promotion...
Sorry, who are you?
My name's Jack.
Hi, Jack.
And talking of promotion to the Premiership, I think for a lot of people the romance story of this season has been Swansea. And as a long-suffering QPR fan, the model of our promotion has been massive overspending on tweeting mercenaries, and Swansea seem to have gone another route, and they've kept the spine of their squad, and they've got a great young manager, and it seems like they are offering something different to the corporate money-sucking giant squid that is the Premier League. And I just wonder whether that will become a new model for clubs trying to get promoted, or whether it's just a flash in the pan.
Interesting. Do you see that catching on, Sean?
I think a lot of Swan's success has clearly got to do with Brendan Rodgers. When he was at Chelsea, they thought very, very highly of him. And he's just carried that on. So I think it's not so much... I think it's built on the success of Martinez over the years, followed by Rodgers. That takes time, and I think football isn't a long-term business on the whole. And it's rare that you get lots of great managers like him. I mean, let's be honest... The same 10 managers get recycled around the treadmill. I mean, I'd love to be a football manager.
We were saying
imagine
that.
It. You know, you basically, you're not good enough to reach a top, but you're good enough just to keep hanging on. You stay at a club for 2 years, you get paid off. Mourinho, I was talking about this earlier. You get your £1 million payoff. You hang around, do a bit of Sky Sports, maybe a bit of work with Jimbo on some kind of Chelsea TV channel.
They haven't got time to spend the money before they're offered another one.
And then you're offered another one. That's
just...
What's
on out there? So
I don't know. It does
much
sound better than this, doesn't it? excellent.
And considerably better than the poetry recital that was on when we were down earlier.
I didn't catch the poetry recital. Are you not a poetry fan, Barry?
I'm wholeheartedly in favour.
What's your favourite poem?
Well, there was a woman. Well, I wasn't. I'm not sure. This being the Guardian, I wasn't sure whether it was a particularly butch lesbian or a very effeminate man. Doing a recital, and just as I walked past, I was running upstairs because we were having our meeting outside and I'd forgotten my cigarettes, and I just, the one thing I heard him, whoever, mother.
Mother.
That was the final word of a poem.
All right. If you took one thing from it,
yeah.
It's lovely that you took that. Over here, hello, sorry.
Will Lionel Messi become the greatest player ever?
Will Lionel Messi or Lionel Messi indeed become the greatest player ever, assuming he hasn't already done so, Mourinho?
I think so. And what I love is that Cristiano Ronaldo has to exist as the Salieri. As the Salieri to his Mozart. It's that sort of dreadful, you know, just that he will become... I love that he has to exist like that, because it's nice when nice guys finish first, and I think that is that's pretty rare in football, it seems. So I think it's a great story, and anyway, I think he will.
Mm. Interesting as well for all those people in the 80s who were wondering, imagine how good Maradona would be if he actually did some work. And Messi's almost like, you know, nature gave us an answer to that. Sean?
Yeah, I think he's on course. People, the knock against him is he hasn't yet won a World Cup, but I think the nature of football has changed so much in the past.
Why would that matter?
Because people think the World Cup is the pinnacle, and actually the Champions League is the pinnacle. You know, Messi's won it 3 times already. He averages about a goal a game, and he's a phenomenon. I think he's 24.
Right.
I mean, God, he's got another 10 years in him easily.
Right. This is the point where we mentioned Matt Letizia.
Well, I was going to say that I think he already is the best player ever, but I still hold out. Well, A, that the young man who answered the question, he could usurp him in time to come. Or else I still hold out hope for Nicholas Bentner.
Okay.
He scored today.
Did he?
No, he did.
Okay, excellent.
Barry, question for you. Now Napoli are out of the Champions League, who do you have a man crush on?
It would have to be, I suppose, I can't say this properly, Loriente.
Really, yeah?
He has amazing hair, and I love watching his team play.
When I think of your man crushes, they do tend to be very much... Sorry, when I think of your man crushes, Barry, and I do think of your man crushes, they tend to be hair-based, really. I can't help but notice that.
Maybe some...
It's a curiosity, isn't it? Sean, who's your favourite?
So you'll never be.
I really haven't.
Really?
No, honestly, I haven't.
Really?
Promise.
All right then.
Mick Hartford?
He'd be too brutal. He'd be too brutal.
Marina, you know I'm coming to you next, yeah?
Oh, I'm not doing this one.
No, you're not? Yeah. Okay, I so
I'm
will.
I'm this one out.
Right, Vincenzo Montella.
What, yeah. Would I?
No, I'm not. Yeah. Do you want to join in as well? Oh, I don't mind, but Vincenzo Montella is the key ingredient there. Yeah. Where are we? Oh, hello, sir.
Hello, Glenn.
Hello, Glenn.
Question about chairmans. Who's the most sensible chairman you know at the moment? Who's the most lunatic? And are chairmen becoming increasingly irrelevant now that so many clubs are being owned by faceless multinational corporations?
Excellent question. Who's your chairman, by the way?
Swansea, Hugh Jones.
Ah, right, excellent, very good, very good. Who do you think is the Marina? Who do you think is the most sensible and least sensible?
Oh God, most sensible. I do think Arsenal are sensible.
Do you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do think Arsenal are sensible. The most lunatic. God, that's. I mean, it depends what you're in it for. From time to time, Abramovich seems quite lunatic, but it's. It depends what they're in it for. If it's a strategy of visibility, or if it's a, I don't know. In terms of whether they're becoming more irrelevant, I think when they're a lot, given the sort of influx of sugar daddies, as it were, those people are particularly relevant because you've always got to worry that they could just pick up and go, or that you know eventually. It was quite interesting that brilliant QPR documentary. Which brought lots of managers out of the woodwork after talking about the nutty chairman they'd worked with. And, you know, you just, right the way through, people are trying to pick the team, right the way from lowest division all the way up, people trying to pick the team. And it seems that it happens much more, I think, than we give it credit for. And we should know more about it, really, I think.
We should. Is there now a position where it's quite possible to argue that Mike Ashley is one of the most sensible chairmen out there?
Well, I was going to say, I don't think he's the most sensible, but I think he got a lot of abuse, and a lot of it from me, which it turns out he didn't deserve at all. I don't know if Newcastle fans have warmed to him since they were calling for his head on a spike or not, but yeah, I mean, they're, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, they're quite high up on the table. A lot higher up. Some people were tipping them for relegation at the start of the season. And, yeah, he made some very astute decisions, business decisions. And in terms of the worst, Ken Bates is, for me, just
to look
nuts.
Past that. Sean?
I think Stoke have done things really smartly. They've, you know, gradually improved year on year, spent a little bit more. They've kept their finances quite tight. Pulis talks very well about his chairman, the guy who runs Bet365, and that's not the reason why I'm picking them. I think Portsmouth have been terribly mismanaged. I might be interested to know, what about in Italy? There must be some terrible...
What, the worst chairman and the best chairman in Italy? Ooh, that's a tough one, because there have been some absolute stinkers there, haven't there? Zamperini probably be the worst. I think we talked about this on the paper review the other day. The chairman who has been through 5 managers in the same season, only to end up with the one he started with. It's probably right up there. The best chairman, woof.
Moratti?
No, he's been hideous. Who's been the best chairman in... Campadelli was really good with Chievo early days, but they've lost a bit of their...
of their push now. Lotito, even though everyone hates him, has done a brilliant job. I'm losing everyone here.
Silvio Berlusconi.
Silvio Berlusconi. I was reaching that. That was going to be my little twist at the end. You know, no chairman in football has won more than he has in his 20 years in charge. So effectively,
are you talking about core cases or trolls?
Yeah. Now, is this the final question? I Carumba, I believe it is.
Exciting.
And it belongs to...
Chris.
Hi, Chris.
Hiya.
I hope it's a good one, frankly, because...
Yeah. No,
so do I now. Is Harry Redknapp tactically good enough to be the next England manager?
Ooh. Well, there's two questions there. Do you have to be tactically good to be England manager?
Yes.
And if you do, is Harry Redknapp... does he pass the bar? Sean Ingle, you're the England fan, yeah?
Don't know about that. I think if you're looking for an Englishman to manage England, and the FA are, because we had a sort of meeting with them a few months ago, and Adrian Behrendt. No, we were at Wembley and we had croissants and muffins. Actually, it was loads of muffins, but we didn't. They thought more of the Guardian were going to turn up, and there was only about four of us did. So they'd ordered this huge plate
of
muffins.
That's possibly because the rest of us weren't told about it.
But there was this huge plate of chocolate muffins and raspberry muffins, and I think Brooking had a couple, and Adrian Bedington as well. Marina knows quite well. But they were quite clear. They didn't want to make any decisions because this was before the Redknapp court case. However, they were very keen that it was going to be an Englishman. And if that's the case, and you're looking really at Hodgson, Pearce, and then Redknapp. And out of those three, I think Redknapp is at least as good as the other two, and I think he's probably the best thing we've got.
John Terry?
Phil Brown.
Mickey Adam. Brian Robson. Steve Bruce.
These are all good options. Harry Redknapp, just clear this up for a thickie at the back like myself. Is he really tactically bereft?
No.
Or was that a little game that he was playing to try and play the common man card and the arm around the shoulder card? Because I always assumed it was a bit of PR, a bit of, keep it simple, keep people on side. But the last few games seem to indicate that he doesn't know what his best team is.
Well, I think there's a part of that. I think they're missing Aaron Lennon, because I think Spurs played best with two wings on the flanks.
Yeah.
I think I was chatting to Evan Fannin about this, and he made a very good point. His brother, I think it was one of his brothers, is a hotshot lawyer, and he was saying that the court case, whenever you've gone through a major court case, it absolutely knocks you out mentally. And since Redknapp was cleared, Spurs have won two games at out of the last nine. And I think that might be a hangover. But I think it's a fair point. Without Lennon, has Redknapp got a plan B or another way of playing? And he struggled, I think. So they have had a tough run of fixtures, but they have been pretty poor as well.
Oh, sorry, Barry.
Well, I think it's a myth. There's a famous story about him sending on Pavlyuchenko in a game and his instruction for just fucking run about a bit. And I think that exaggerates. I think Harry's thing is he buys good players and lets them do their thing. And he's very good at, if things are going wrong, at switching them around so they start going right. So in that regard, I think he'd be ideal to manage England. Because things will go wrong. He can switch things around.
Marina?
I mean, he can only tactically manage for the players. He's going to have to tactically manage. And I think he'd be... I'm looking forward to when they turn it into a reality show, because we're effectively running it like that every year now. Just someone new, just so we get a new one every year. It's being run like that on an informal basis. I'm all for, if only we could have Do I Not Like That style cameras. I crave that to be allowed to happen just one more time, although I still watch that.
Classic programme,
huh? It's amazing.
Marvellous. All right, was that genuinely the last question? Oh, crikey. Well, I hope you've enjoyed it, and we certainly have enjoyed being here with you. So many thanks to you all. Many thanks to Sean Ingle, Barry Glendinning, and Marina Hyde for the first time ever on Football Weekly. Producer Ben, for it is he. Shadowy Uber producer Matt Hall. And me.
Looking very discreet there.
Doesn't get more shadowy than that rugby top. As I say, many thanks to you all. Oh, I should plug the thing. Is that what you're going to say? Plug the thing. Right. Also, if you find yourself at a loose end in the King's Cross vicinity, do try.
Sorry, I just talked about plugging the thing, and now you're talking loose ends and
King's Cross. Yeah, no, it's the Guardian Street Stories app. Sorry, that's going to disappoint a lot of people, the way that was ending. But yeah, the Guardian Street Stories app is an amazing thing. You have it on your phone, it is free, and it knows where you are, and it tells you a little story in your ear of something that happened there in King's Cross. And there's a lot of stories, a million stories, in the King's Cross, in the naked King's Cross and that. Anyway, the Guardian Street Stories app, get it now. We're back on Monday with a regular pod, less special than this one, but there is that, if you like. Apart from that, have a super weekend, enjoy the sunshine, and thanks once again for being with us today.
During March, The Guardian's podcasts are sponsored by audible.co.uk. Audible has over 60,000 digital audiobooks and are offering Guardian podcast listeners one for free. Visit guardian.co.uk/free download to find out more.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.